Chapter 5. Not long thereafter, as Jim Ferguson lay on the floor of his garage beneath a Buick, he heard a car pull up not far from him and stop. By the sound of it, he guessed it to be a new car. He wheeled himself out and found himself facing the fender of a nearly new Cadillac. The door had already opened, and a man in a business suit and black shiny shoes was stepping forth.
Hi there, Mr. Harmon, the old man said, sitting up. I see you got back. I was out when you were by before. Not too much wrong with your car, is there? A nearly new Cadillac like that?
He laughed nervously because he did not want to get involved with Harmon's car to any extent. He had neither the tools nor the experience for this kind of car, this new, expensive car with its interminable power assists and accessories. Harmon, smiling, said, "Every machine has bugs, Jim, as you're always telling me."
That's sure true, Ferguson said.
"Nothing serious," Harmon said, "just the greasing."
"Okay,"
Ferguson said with relief. Harmon said, "Jim, they tell me you're quitting business."
"I'm taking a rest," the old man said.
"For good?"
"It's sold," he said.
"I see," Harmon said.
"Listen," the old man said, starting to put his hand on Harmon's shoulder and then quickly changing his mind.
He stood wiping his greasy hands with a rag.
"There's a couple of good garages in town. You don't have to worry. I know a couple of mechanics you can trust. These days, with these goddamn labor unions..."
"Yes," Harmon interrupted. "The employers have to hire the men the unions send over, whether they're competent or not."
"We're both in business," Ferguson said. "We know how it is."
"You'll get men," Harmon said, "who stand around and do no work at all. And when you go to fire them..." He gestured.
"It's impossible,"
Ferguson said. "Illegal."
"And that's why you got nothing but leaf rakers, like in the WPA days. It's socialism."
The old man felt excitement in him, a kind of frenzy. How pleasant it was to stand here like this with this man, this well-dressed customer, Mr. Harmon, who drove a 1958 Cadillac, talking to him on an equal basis, one businessman to another. That was what it was. They were equals. His hands jumped about madly. The rag slipped away, and he gave it a kick to free it from his trouser cuff.
"Yeah, I've been in business a long time, and look what taxes have done to me. It's part of their system to make it ridiculous for a man to devote his life to work, because when he's all done, what does he have? Income tax."
He spat on the floor. "Yes," Harmon said in his cultured, calm voice, "the income tax definitely is part of the share the wealth scheme."
They put it over on America," the old man said, "during Franklin Roosevelt's administration. Every time I think of that Roosevelt and that son of his, that colonel..."
With a mild, good-humored smile, Harmon said, "That takes me back, thinking about Elliot as a colonel."
"I'm keeping you,"
the old man said.
"No," Harmon said. "You got lots to do, and so do I. I tell you, Harmon, we both got too much to do. Only the difference between you and me is that you got the vitality and youth to do it, and I don't. I'm worn out. I tell you the truth, I'm finished."
"Hell no," Harmon said.
"It's a fact."
"Why, my God, when I came in..."
"Sure, I was down under that Buick, but listen."
The old man moved as close as possible to Harmon, as close as he could without getting grease on him, and said in a low voice,
"Yeah, one day, when I'm down under that, you know what? I'm going to have a heart attack and die."
He stepped back.
"So that's why I have to get out of here."
"And with all your skill," Harmon said.
"It's a shame," the old man said, "but I have to listen to Fratt. That's his business. I go to experts. I'm not a doctor. All I know is that for years now I had indigestion, and I went to Fratt, and at first he didn't find anything, but then he took my blood pressure."
He told Harmon what his blood pressure was. It was terrible, and he saw Harmon's face show the response.
"That's a shame, Jim," Harmon said.
But if I take it easy, I don't mean loaf around the house, but find something less strenuous. It's the lifting.
He paused. Harmon said, "Had you ever thought of hiring someone to do the heavy work?"
"Could never find anyone to rely on."
"Did you discuss it with your broker?"
"You mean Matt Pestavridis?"
"Your attorney," Harmon said. "Or your realtor. Who do you talk over your business matters with? Who did you consult before you sold your place?" The old man was silent. "Didn't you discuss it with someone experienced in business matters? You could have gotten someone in to manage your shop for you. A foreman. It's done all the time. Any good business consultant could have researched it for you and come up with someone reliable. That's a matter of care and study, a matter of procedure." The old man could think of nothing to say. "I'm surprised at your broker," Harmon said. The old man said,
"I just called him up and said I wanted to sell my garage for health reasons."
"A distress sale. Didn't you take a loss?"
"Yes," he said.
"If you don't mind my asking, how much did you get for it?"
$35,000.
Harmon glanced about him at the building.
"Well, that seems a fair price,"
he pondered, rubbing his lower lip with his knuckle.
"Listen, Jim," he said. "Obviously it's crying over spilt milk to discuss any use you might have put your garage to, but you did get your price. You did cash yourself out."
"Yes," the old man said, feeling pride. Glancing up acutely, Harmon said, "I hope you didn't take paper."
"Paper?"
"Seconds. Second deeds of trust."
"Oh, no," he said at once. "No paper. $10,000 cash and the rest at $200 a month."
"At what interest?" The old man could not remember.
"I'll show you."
He led the way to his cluttered office. Harmon followed with long strides.
"Here."
From the desk drawer, he got the papers. Laying them out, he stepped back to permit Harmon to see them. For a time, Harmon examined the papers.
"I think you did very well," he said at last. "Thanks," the old man said with relief.
Standing by the desk, Harmon thumped the closed papers in a deeply absorbed manner. He thumped them again and again.
"I tell you what. Listen, you want some, what'll I call it? Not advice."
Lifting the papers open once more, he leafed through them.
"Over on the other side of the bay, in Marin County, they're doing a lot of building. They're expanding."
He stared at the old man.
"Yes,"
the old man said. He held his breath.
"They're rebuilding parts of Highway 101 completely, a multi-million dollar project that'll take years.
Have you been over there?"
"Well, not for a year or so."
"There are several new shopping centers," Harmon said. "One at Corte Madera, a truly magnificent job. Now listen." His voice had a harsh, brisk quality. It penetrated, and the old man went to close the office door, although Harmon had not told him to do so.
"Don't kid yourself," Harmon said. "That's where the growth is. Not here, not in the East Bay. The master plan," he laughed. "There's still no room. The East Bay is filled up. So is the peninsula. The only place you can grow and build is Marin County."
He stared at the old man, wide-eyed.
"Yeah,"
the old man said, nodding. Reaching inside his coat, Harmon brought out a flat, dark gray wallet. He opened it and took a business card from it. With his fountain pen, he wrote slowly and deliberately on the back of the card, then passed it to the old man. On the back of the card, Harmon had written a phone number, re-inking the prefix several times. It was not an exchange that the old man knew.
"Do," he read. "Dunlap," Harmon said. "Call that." "Why?"
Harmon said. "Call them in the next 24 hours. Don't wait on this, Jim."
"What is it?"
he demanded, wanting very badly to know, needing to know. Seating himself on the littered desk, Harmon folded his arms. He gazed at the old man silently for a long time.
"Tell me," the old man said, writhing, hearing his voice writhe with a whining tone he had never heard before in his life.
"This man," Harmon said, "is Achilles Bradford. You would know him if you were anywhere involved. If you get him before he's decided, get your attorney and drive over there. He'll do business. He wants to do business, but he can't wait. He's got about 1 million of his own money in it now."
In a calmer voice, he went on, "It's a shopping center, Jim. Up Highway 101, out of San Rafael, toward Petaluma, at Novato. There's the Air Force base up there, Hamilton Field. Many tracked home divisions. More going constantly."
"I see," the old man said, but he did not see.
"What I hear," Harmon said, "is that they're trying for an automotive center. Agency, probably Chevrolet, but possibly Ford. Or even one of the hot imports, such as VW. Anyhow, they'll absolutely be putting a garage. Those people commute, Jim, all the way down to San Francisco. They drive 200 miles a day on that 8-lane freeway, and it's bumper to bumper at rush hour. And listen, there is no train service. You see what that means? Those people have to maintain their cars. The auto center would be complete. New car sales, parts supply, repair garage, it stands or it falls on the repair. And it means a big garage, Jim. Not like you had here, a one-man operation. To keep those people on the road means a 24-hour repair service, with something in the order of 10 to 15 mechanics on call all the time, tow trucks, a jitney service to the city for parts. You begin to get the picture?"
"Yes," he said.
And he did.
"It's a new idea in garage development, oriented toward the future, the garage of tomorrow, in a sense, capable of taking on the responsibility for tomorrow's traffic. The old-fashioned garage will be obsolete in 5 more years. You were right to sell out when you did. You were very smart."
Ferguson nodded. "You could get into this," Harmon said. "Can you get over there? Can you get your attorney and make your move?"
"I don't know," the old man said.
"If not, then go over without him. But get over there!" All at once, Harmon hopped down from the desk. "I have to go. I'm late." He started from the office, swinging the door wide. Following him, Ferguson said,
"But my health. The whole point is I can't do garage work."
Pausing, Harmon said, "The garage investor puts up initial capital and supervises the shop. He contributes know-how and experience. The physical work will be done by union mechanics. Don't you follow?"
"Oh,"
the old man said. Holding out his hand, Harmon said, "So long, Jim." Awkwardly, Jim Ferguson shook the hand.
"The rest," Harmon said, "is up to you."
He winked, a great, friendly, optimistic wink. "You're on your own." Waving, he strode to his Cadillac and jumped in. As he started it up, he called,
"Have to get the grease job tomorrow. Can't wait now."
The Cadillac disappeared out into the traffic. For a long time, Jim Ferguson gazed after it. Then, by degrees, he moved back toward the Buick on which he had been working. An hour later, the telephone in the office rang. When he answered it, he found himself talking to Harmon.
"What did he say?"
Harmon said.
"Oh, I haven't called," the old man said.
"You what?" Harmon sounded astonished.
"Well, you better get on it, Jim. Don't let this slip past you."
He said a few more things of that kind, then hung up, after asking the old man to let him know when he had talked to Bradford. In the office, the old man sat at his desk, meditating.
"I'm not going to be rushed," he told himself. "Nobody can stampede me. It's against my nature."
He thought to himself, "I'm not going to call now or ever. What I'm going to do," he decided,
"is go over there to Marin County
to see that place, that shopping center, and take a look at it with my own eyes. And then if I like what I see, then maybe I'll talk with the guy.
Inside him, he felt a deep spurt of his own nature, his own cunning, and he laughed.
To hell with that, he said aloud. Go on call without knowing anything, with only having someone's word? Why should I believe Harmon? Why should I believe anybody? I didn't get to where I am by relying on what people tell me, on rumor.
But he had to be sure he saw the right place. So, lifting the phone, he called the number next to Harmon's name on his sheet of old customers. That night, when he got home, he passed his wife without a word. He went directly into the bathroom, closed and locked the door, and before Lydia's voice could distract him, he had turned the tub water on full. As he lay in the water, soaking, he thought, I know where it is. I can find it. It was his plan to go up the next morning as early as possible and to be back to his garage by noon. Lying in the tub on his back, staring up at the steam-drenched ceiling, he went over each bit of the plan, relishing it, revolving it in his mind. He made of it the most he could. He filled it in so that nothing was left unthought. A new one, he thought. It would be new, every aspect of the place. No grease, no stale smell. The dampness, the sense of age, the discarded parts heaped in the corner, all gone, swept away. Piles and pools, the dust, none of that. The hell with them, he thought. I'll have an office with all glass and soundproofing. I can see down at the mechanics. I'll be overlooking. With several intercoms. Maybe the kind without wires. Fluorescent lights everywhere, like in the new factories. Lots of automatic stuff, all organized. No wasted time costing money. It'll be science throughout, he told himself. Atomic, like in the labs. Like Livermore, where they invented the bomb. He saw himself a part of the new world, along with Harmon, along with all other enterprising men. This is America. He thought. Vision! What you do with capital and imagination? And I have both. Boldness, he thought. You have to be bold, even ruthless, or otherwise they'll get you. They're always in wait, trying to pull you down to their level. Naturally, when you get up there, they resent it. They envy. You ignore that, however, like Nixon does. He stands and sneers when they insult him, throw rocks, even spit. Risks his life. His eyes half shut, submerged in the hot water, with new water roaring, the old man thought of himself that way, not lost in the dirty, unimportant San Pablo Avenue of drive-ins. He saw himself with the big people who mattered. I'm in industry, he thought. Not politics. That's not my game. This country is founded on business. It's the backbone. Investment. I'm investing in the future of America. Not for my own good, hell, not for profit, but to expand the economy, and it will count. What I do will count.